Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
So it's been over 40 years since Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara first met as members of the Second City Comedy Troupe, the beginnings of a successful working relationship that spanned generations from stage to movies to television. Eugene Levy has stolen scenes in movies like the original National Lampoon's Vacation, the American Pie movies, Waiting for Guffman, and Schitt's Creek, with new episodes airing every Wednesday night at 7 Central on Pop TV. And Eugene Levy joins us tonight. Eugene, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good evening. How are we doing? I think we've used 10 minutes out of my 20.
We have already. We have. Well, it's a long career. It's a long, illustrious career, Mr. Levy.
I think, kind of looking back, it's amazing that so much was kind of jammed into.
Right.
So few years. Hey, wait a minute. It's not so few years.
Exactly.
It's like 40. What the hell am I talking about?
It's like 40. Well, you know, speaking of 40, stepping time back in time a little bit, how did you get into acting? You know, was it all in college? Were you the class clown? Like, how did you kind of find your comedy chops?
Well, no, I was not the class clown. I sat beside the class clown.
Okay.
And studied him as I'm quoting myself from Waiting for Guffman.
Gotcha.
I always remember a line from Harold Ramis, dear Harold Ramis,
yeah,
the late Harold Ramis, who graced the Second City stage there in Chicago, who said that he was never the class clown, but he wrote for the class clown.
I love that.
But I think I kind of developed some comedy chops, although, you know, to me it was just kind of a crazy thing that kind of made me laugh, and I would start writing these odd little bits and pieces, little bits of prose, little paragraphs, mm-hmm. sometimes one line, sometimes a poem, and I put them into a little booklet that I called Poetry, Prose, and Cons. And, you know, so I'd have little things like Ode to a Frenchman. Oui, oui, maintenant, c'est un espoir, comme ci, comme ça. Hee hee, ha ha. I'd title something Knowledge, and then I'd put ... So those were, and then those little things kind of got taken around the school. People started reading them and said, oh, my God, it's funny. And then they got printed in the school paper. And next thing you know, I'm running for president.
That's awesome. It's dry. It's always dry, unexpected humor with you.
Well, I didn't know really what it was at the time. It was kind of, I think what I was writing back in high school was kind of reminiscent. I'm not comparing myself, but it was reminiscent of a Spaniard in the works, the John Lennon book from the early 60s that he wrote, these odd little bizarre little things, and my pieces were odd little bizarre little things, but I don't know whether I would categorize them as dry back then. They were just odd, but people seemed to like them, and then that's when I realized, and other people realized, that that I was funny.
Well, and the famed Second City Troupe, obviously based here in Chicago, began its troupe in Toronto in 1973 with the likes of Dan Aykroyd and Gilda Radner and Brian Doyle Murray. And the following year included John Candy, Catherine O'Hara, and one Eugene Levy. And that must have been an experience of a lifetime.
Well, you know, when Second City started in Toronto, I was that came right on the heels of a musical called Godspell that a bunch of us started. It was our first show in Toronto. Marty Short, myself,
Gilda
Radner, when Godspell, I guess contractually, we were contracted for 12 months, and at the end of 12 months, a bunch of the people left Godspell, like Gilda, and went on to Second City, and I stayed in Godspell because they gave me the lead, and I thought, well, it'll never happen again, so I may as well take it.
Yeah.
So it was only 3 months. They opened in Toronto in 1973, and 3 months after they opened, I actually made my way into the show. So I wasn't there for the very opening, but I kind of moved in quickly, you know, in 3 months. It was a kind of theater I'd never seen before. It was really exciting. It was funny. It was a review. It was intimate. And it was smart, you know, and I was just blown away and a little intimidated by the show when I first saw it. And learning to get comfortable kind of improvising in front of an audience took a little time. For me, it was I was petrified the first couple times I went out on stage and, you know, had to improvise. But there were people like Danny Aykroyd, Valerie Bromfield, just insanely brilliant at it. Joe Flaherty, insanely brilliant at it. And Gilda was just Gilda, and she could do no wrong on stage. People loved her no matter what she did.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Did you audition in Chicago, or did you end up auditioning up north?
No, I auditioned in Toronto for the show. Everybody in the Toronto company auditioned in Toronto, and John Candy was the one person that auditioned in Toronto, and Del Close, who was directing the Chicago Second City company, said, no, we want him down in Chicago. So they took John and brought him down to Chicago, and he went into the company with Bill Murray and Betty Thomas, and I can't remember who else was in the company, actually, but I know those two were in the company.
Well, I've heard
Andy Ryerson.
I've heard you talk about the car ride you took from Toronto to Chicago, and I don't know if they were trading cast or you were performing in Chicago. You were with Dan Aykroyd and John Candy. How cool was that?
Well, it was pretty cool. We didn't think it was that cool at the time.
Yeah, right.
But you know, it was a luckily John had a car. That made it easy and probably saved us some money since nobody else was paying for it.
Right, exactly.
But we went down there, and the highlight of the trip was I think we had a flat on the way, and John ended up changing the flat, and I think I was asleep in the back seat and never woke up.
And your film career began to take off, you know, in the 1980s. And, you know, my kids probably first discovered you. You know, you were the key to selling Clark Griswold, Chevy Chase, the Queen family truckster in 1983. Yeah. So that's how they discovered Eugene Levy.
Wow. Well, the only thing I remember about that day was we shot it in Glendale, California. It was August, and it was about 132 in the shade.
Oh, man.
That's kind of my memory of the day, but... I also remember when Harold Ramis, and I was watching the Letterman when he first came on. It must have been 83, 84.
Yep.
And Harold was going to be on the Letterman show promoting Vacation. So I stayed up to watch in my bedroom, and he kind of came out on the panel. And the first thing Letterman said was, "How about that car salesman scene?" And I bolted up out of bed. You know, oh my God, they're talking about my scene?
It was classic. It was classic. It really kind of set the tone for the entire movie.
Yeah, it was, well, how funny was the movie, number one?
Yeah,
it was an amazing, amazing movie, and just kind of catapulted, you know, Harold up there into the upper echelons of, you know, cinema comedy.
All right, we are talking to Eugene Levy. Eugene and his son Dan are co-hosting the 76th Annual Emmy Awards this Sunday, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. You know, reflecting back on the movies you've made, how cool is it that you keep working with this legendary ensemble of such talented people?
Well, I've been very lucky. You know, I've worked with... listen, it's so you don't know how great it is to be able to work with your friends. If you're able to do it, and I have been able to do it over the years, it just makes work so bearable, you know.
Yeah.
I've did 5 movies with John, and Armed and Dangerous was one of them, and we. I guess the thing I remember most about Armed and Dangerous, other than having a lot of laughs doing it with John, was that he talked me into doing, I was wearing a pair of kind of leather chaps in that in one scene in that movie.
Yes.
That didn't quite have enough material on the backside. And it was John that talked, and I didn't want to wear those things. I said, no, I can't do that, I can't do that. He said, no. And John talked to me for an hour, basically saying, well, this is the denouement of this comedy stretch in the movie, and it'll cap this little sequence in the movie so well. It'll be so funny, it'll be so great. Comedically, it makes so much sense. You just have to do it. I said, okay, John, you've made your point. All right, I'll go ahead and wear them. And
and it did.
Meanwhile, cut to, we're shooting the scene on Hollywood Boulevard, and there's a crowd of about 400 people on the other side of the street. And every time I see that movie, I think, you know what? Didn't have to wear them. I mean, it is kind of funny in a way, but, you know, for me, I've got to live with it for the rest of my life.
Right, exactly, exactly.
But he got, the thing of it is, he did spend an hour talking me into it, and then he had the biggest laugh that I actually did it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's what friends are for, right?
Like a true friend, yes.
That's right. Then he did Waiting for Guffman, which, you know, you starred and wrote the film as well. Again, a successful collaboration with people you grew up with in the business, Christopher Guest and Catherine O'Hara. Do you enjoy being in front of the camera or behind the camera? I mean, you've done both. I mean, what do you enjoy doing?
I think I went through a phase where I thought it would be more fun behind the camera, and, you know, started directing, and, you know, because I thought the day would go faster if you've got, you know, more to do. But I found when I was kind of directing a project and, you know, we'd be on a break and I'd look over and see all the actors kind of over by the coffee machine, you know, having a lot of laughs. And I was being bombarded with technical questions about what kind of filter do you want to use?
Yeah.
Over the camera on the next shot, and how do you want to light this thing? And I found, I'd rather be over there having the laughs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, this is not as interesting to me as just having a bunch of laughs with your fellow actors and kind of having fun in front of the camera. So I, you know, for somebody who's really not an exhibitionist, I actually have more fun in front of the camera.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could be one of the bigger enigmas in the business in that regard.
Well, I'll tell you, speaking of fun in front of the camera, after so many other films, fast forward to the late 90s, the American Pie movies, that is the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, listen, you know, who knew, really? It took a lot to get me to do that movie. I didn't necessarily want to do it when I read the script, and, you know, my manager at that time just kept saying, "Go in and take a meeting." I say, "Why would I want to be in a movie? I wouldn't go and see. It's really gross, you know." And I understand how kids would like it, but I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
He said, "Well, just take a meeting." I finally went in and met Chris and Paul Weitz, and in no time at all, I realized these guys are incredibly smart with such an acute sense of comedy that I trusted them, and I just said I had a problem with the role of the father as it was written. It had a kind of a crass side to it that I didn't really like, kind of a nudge-nudge, wink-wink thing that the character had with his son. And they said, "Well, what do you want to do to change it?" I said, "Everything. I'd like to start from scratch and change the character." So they said, "Well, good. Come on in. We're going to improvise. Come in on Saturday, a week before we start shooting, and we'll improvise. We'll go through all the scenes and improvise them."
But there's not a lot of people that can do that, Eugene. I mean, that's what makes you so unique and so special, is that people should be able to count on you to come in and put your own mark on it and make it special and make it something that's really going to be entertaining.
Well, I think, you know, at the time, improvising was not, no, let me go back. I think we had already done Waiting for Guffman before American Pie. Mm-hmm. So we had already kind of, you know, gotten into a nice little rhythm with improvising. But it wasn't so much that I wanted it improvised. It was just I didn't like the character. So in order to, and they wanted me in the movie. So we went in and improvised all the scenes and made them, Jason Biggs and I, and they were really kind of funny. And
they were great.
1 week later, we go in to shoot the movie, and I noticed there are no sides, what they call sides, which are the scenes you're shooting that day. They type them up on smaller pages so you can carry them onto the set and use them as a guide. I said, well, I have no sides in my trailer. And Paul and Chris Weitz came back and said, oh, well, we thought you'd remember what you did last week when you improvised those scenes. So literally we went on camera trying to remember what we'd improvised. But it was a great deal of fun, and, you know, cut to, we're, you know, four features later. Yeah, in the theaters.
You're the and I know there's some direct to video stuff you did too, but you're the highlight of the movie. Like, the story was about these high school seniors growing up, and you ended, you know, every time I knew you were going to be on screen, I'd get excited because I knew how funny it was going to be.
Well, it really turned out well, and I give Paul and Chris Weitz a lot of credit for, you know, having the patience to go through all those scenes and kind of, you know, redoing them. It really did work out well. And basically, I just wanted the dad to be a dad, a corny old dad.
Yeah.
And not try and be his son's pal.
All right. The iconic Eugene Levy hosting this year's Emmy Awards with his son, Dan, this Sunday.